Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
hi all, and welcome to Cosmic Voice on this special show we played on.
Getting the feedback here.
Tonight we've got Ray Kozolandic,
who's a lot of people will have listened to on this video,
and his previous one. Now, he's got quite an extraordinary tale to tell us all.
And it's going to be rather interesting, I think.
Jordan, the second hour, tonight will be on to add to the conversation. And in the third hour, we will have Katrina Edwards-Roy, who will talk about self-empowerment and upliftment. And Ray, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Thomas. How you doing?
Nice to speak to you finally. Sorry it's taking so long.
I understand. Can you hear me pretty good?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Before that, I'm just going to introduce Drake. Hi, Drake.
Hello.
How's things?
Mostly going the right direction. I got things turned back down, back to the rubber side down again, so things is more under control. I hate it when my computer floats around the room and stuff.
Right. Ray, do you want to tell us a bit about yourself, and then we can go into your story?
Okay. I'm Ray Kozolandic. I was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri, South St. Louis. That's where I'm living now. And I actually grew up in a town called Dogtown. That's where everything started at age 12 years old. And when you want me to go into my story, I'll just go ahead into it.
Right. So it all started for you at the age of 12.
Right.
That's correct. No doubt you'll remember the first incident. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I remember them all. It really started with my grandfather, my late grandfather, in Yugoslavia. He was a lumberjack, and my grandmother would make 5 sandwiches for him. He'd have his coffee. He'd sit on his stump to take a break. And out of these woods came this 12-inch dwarf, all colored clothes. He sat on a stump with my late grandfather. My grandfather gave him a sandwich, and they would talk. They would do this quite often. But what this little 12-inch dwarf was telling my late grandfather is that one of his sons and one of his grandsons would be chosen to meet many star people. Everybody calls them aliens, they're star people. But anyway, my dad was implanted at 5 years old. I came into the picture 12 years old, 1959. My dad had a four family flat. I would go across the street, because back in my time, we had these enormous street lights. They were really neat looking, gold colored, little black dots on. And I'd have these little pebbles, these little tiny pebbles with these two big rocks to actually break the light, because I used to love to hear the ping off the light. And as I'm throwing these little pebbles, out of the corner of my eye, I see this metallic ball, a little bit bigger than a basketball, kind of floating towards me. No noise, completely silent. It was over me about 30 feet. Well, this little 12-year-old kid picks up one of these boulders, because I was going to step back and throw. This object would have fell and broken half. And this is a little 12-year-old kid talking like this. When I went to step back to throw the rock, I dropped the rock because I saw these little windows with these little figures. These guys are my buddies now, these little 3-inch humanoids from the 5th and 7th dimension. It shone a beam of light on me. I was out there for about 45 minutes. So I watched this object go over this first house and went down, shot straight up, disappeared. So I ran inside the house. My mom's cooking breakfast. My dad's sitting in his seat at the kitchen table. He had this pad that he would always write on. So I started drawing what I'm seeing. And my dad jumps up and he's saying all kinds of big words. Where did you see this? And I said, Dad, I seen it out in the front. Before I could say any more, my dad was running out the front door. My mom was following him because I had to go out and get him. So when we came back into the kitchen, he tells me to sit down. He says, I want you to tell me everything you know. And I looked at my dad and I said, if I tell you the reason I was out there, you're not going to kick my ass because I'm trying to break that light. He kind of laughed at that. But my dad knew then he wasn't alone no more. My dad had somebody to console with. My dad was old country ways. We're Catholic. My dad didn't believe in God. And I didn't know we were going to actually go meet our first meeting with star people that night. So what my dad did, he went grocery shopping. He thought more of his wife than E.T. So we bought all the groceries, the 2 loaves of bread, and then we headed out. And it was all telepathic communication. We knew where to go, and the car died, and they're coming to get us. And we're going into this giant flying saucer. They put me in one room, my dad in one room. I'm laying on this metal table. And I looked up at the ceiling, and I saw this yellow blanket-like coming. It was floating down from the ceiling, and it landed on me. I could just move my head and my feet. I was trying to push my hands through this material. It was real sticky. And I kind of figured my dad was going through the same thing. So when they were done scraping and taking semen from us, I was 12 years old. I was a little scared crying. They put me and my dad into this beautiful room, which I have my meetings with. I call my Fab Four. I'll get into that down the road. But anyway, we had black and white TV back in our time. We didn't have color TV. And here come this color TV floating in the midair right in front of me and my dad. It's showing Hitler, the wars, and our beautiful planet totally on fire. I was only 12 years old, so my dad was asking him questions. Did the sun fall? Did we have war with you guys? They're not saying nothing. This is all an education as we go through this. Well, after that incident's over, we're coming out of the craft. Now, these people come from a lot of different dimensions, galaxies, whatever. They're carrying radiation, magnetic field, germs, whatever. It's all in the picture. We're standing outside of this craft as we're coming out. And some of the circle graves are out there with us. And I was only 12 years old, and I was bent over, and my dad was bent over. Our noses started bleeding real bad. It was like a necklace. It wasn't even hitting the ground. It was coming out of the right nostril back into the left nostril. And we're hitting ourselves on the chest because I was looking at my dad. I thought we were going to die right there. So it stopped bleeding. They started walking us to the car. So we get into the car, and we're watching them leave, going to the flying saucer and take off. When I went to turn around in the back seat, everything was there but the bread. And I grabbed my dad by the arm, and I said, Daddy, everything's there, but they took the bread. So the car would start. We're going back to the house, and like I said, we would meet in the backyard. It was 210 by 60. I used to cut it with a push mower. And I looked at my dad and I go, the next time we meet the star people, we bring bread because it lit something up. We always knew what was going on. We didn't have any missing time. It was a peace offering. Well, my dad laughed. But the second time we went to meet him, he took 5 loaves of bread. Third time we went to see him, he took 7 loaves of bread. My dad didn't laugh no more. He knew it was a peace offering for us to always come back. So, you got any questions?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Well, the Serpo Grays, we were in this craft, and we're sitting in these colored chairs, and I saw these, like, wires or fiber optic cable wires all around the craft with these real vines. Now, these Serpo Grays are vegetarians, and they have these handprints. They're different way the handprints are for like 7 of the circle grays, the one that fly the crab and whatever. But I noticed this one circle gray sitting down by the handprints, And he took this vine, and he literally stuck it in the side of his hand. And that's when I nudged my dad, and I said, Dad, he's feeding himself. My dad saw that. It was little things we would pick up from each one. And we would get messages telepathic. Well, my dad would tell it later on for me. But we're going to go to another meeting. We never knew what the people were going to look like, other than when it got down to my, what I call my Fab Four, because it's all me. But we saw this giant egg shape, beautiful, because this is a wee hour of the morning when we're going to meet them. Egg shape, orange, just brilliant, beautiful color. So we're going on a craft, and inside this craft is six giant one-eyed cyclops people. That's what they're called. They're 8 to 10 feet tall. Now, I'm 12 years old. I'm scared as hell. I'm sure my dad is, too. They got us circled. We literally thought they were going to just tear us apart. But when we heard this leader-like talking telepathic, we are your friends. We're not here to harm you. They were there for information. Every time we went to see any of the star people, I've seen a total of 32. 28 good, 4 bad. We brung bread, no matter what. We never had any missing time. We always knew what was said, what was going on. I got notes that I always wrote the stuff down when I got older. Yeah. But the messages that these one-eyed cyclops were giving us, they're protectors and watchers of this planet. They've been watching this planet for years. And they're worried about us. They want us to turn everything around. Most of the, well, the 28, all the message was about the same. The 4 bad ones I met, it wasn't good messages for them. That we need to turn everything around. We got to quit spraying our food, because in the long run, we're killing ourselves. And they want us to stop anything nuclear, nuclear power plants, stop the wars. Because what was happening, and the reason we met all these star people, it gets into these dimensions, which gets into them. That's why you hear or see these UFOs flying over military bases, anything nuclear. Now, the next ones we met were the, and I want you to pay attention when we get into this, the insects, because I met the ant people, cat people, the worm people. When we met these ant people, they're 6 to 7 feet tall. They actually fly in two crafts. If you took a shell of a turtle and took the turtle out, it's all black with this red glowing light underneath. And then they actually have a craft that looks just like a giant ant. Well, the leaders, when we were in their craft, the leaders have wings. The majority of the ants don't. Remember, we got tiny ants down here.
Yes.
So
yes.
When me and my dad were going through this, when we met the worm people, the cat people, you know, I got a cat, and he's not very tall, but these cat people are 9 to 12 feet tall. And we came to the conclusion, me and my dad just kind of used the year 1800, that the giant ones came down here in Colorado, spoke to the little tiny ones to let them know the purpose, what their purpose was to do down here. If you look into some of these stories with the Hopi Indians, the ant people actually fed these Hopi Indians, saved these Hopi Indians, because the ant people live underneath the ground. They live underneath, a lot of these star people live underneath the ground on their planets. When they would give us their dimension or galaxy, they, a lot of them wouldn't tell the planet they were from. And I met these giant Sihars people. They're from the 23rd planet, 40 to 50,000 light years from planet Earth. Their planet was dying. These guys are 2 to 9 feet tall. We got tiny seahorse people in the ocean. So again, you got the giant ones, you got the small ones. The thing that blew my mind about these seahorse people, this is all me now.
Yes, yes.
There was a movie out called Cowboys and Aliens. They fly in a dragonfly craft. Well, when I saw that movie, Cowboys and Aliens, I don't know who came up with it, but it was a dragonfly craft in there. And like I said, their planet was dying. They were supposed to get back to me. You know, they never did. So I don't know what happened with them.
Right.
Right.
Let me try again. The first... You're 12 years of age. I'm having issues with the blog source. It's reverberating.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine. It's not you, it's the blog source.
Okay.
At the age of 12, if you were 12 again and you were given a free will choice, would you go through again what you've done or not?
Yes, I would. And for the reason is, and I'm doing this for my late grandfather, my late father, and the people on his planet. It was the education that we got and the friends that we met, like my Fab Four. The Fab Four is the Serpo Graves from Planet Circle. I was there on their planet three times, once with my late father, twice by myself. Then there's the Elephant People. I know it sounds nuts. These people are real. They're from the 13th and 14th dimension. Then there's the Nordics. These people with blonde hair, they're beautiful. Their women are beautiful. They actually fly in their crafts. They fly in a cigar-shaped object, brown or white, 3 football fields long, or a giant flying saucer, or a triangle craft. Then there's my little 3-inch humanoid buddies from the 5th and 7th dimensions. What I do now, I'll get into some of these others in a minute.
Yeah.
My Fab Four, I meet every 2 months for vital information. They either come on my TV, my TV's off, or they'll come on my radio in my car's off. I actually had an ET phone call one time. My whole bedroom just lit up this beautiful mist green color. And they could talk telepathically, or they would come on my TV and they would say something like this. Now the Nordics and the Elephant People can speak both ways. They can speak our language. And they would say line 40S. Well, that would mean Highway 40 south. I would drive south. I would see the craft. The code was they would blink the lights twice when they crossed my car. The next exit was mine, whether it was winding or straight. And I would see the giant cigar craft or the flying saucer. My car would die, and then I would go meet them. There's a room. I don't know if you have any pictures. If I hold up a picture, can you even see it?
No, it's not on this one. It's not a okay. Video process.
So what? It's like a,
I think most of our members have seen the pictures and the craft, and it resonated with quite a few of them. Obviously, there's some aspects of the beings are not known. I think the orange one and
orange people.
The orange people was one, and the worm people were another. So. There's another question, Buzzy. You've just got to this point, and then I'll allow you to carry on. What was your thought process when the car stalls and you are approaching the craft? Do you instinctively know which ones you will meet beforehand?
We never knew. The only ones we really knew was the Fab Four. My dad met them before he died. But no, because it was telepathic.
Yeah.
And the message was, it was given like line 44, Highway 44.
Yeah.
East. We would take off, or I would take off. And the code would see the craft, come in front of the car lengthwise, the next exit was ours. And these were people that this 12-inch dwarf had talked to my late grandfather in Yugoslavia to let him know one of his sons and one of his grandsons would be chosen to meet many star people for information.
Yes.
Which it came out that way. And when I go and meet my Fab Four, it's in this meeting room, and there's dials and there's this crystal vase that he would stick this crystal in, and the whole wall would light up like, kind of like you'd be at a drive-in theater. He would show past, present, and future videos. Well, he showed me a future video. We have what we call the Gateway Arch downtown. Now, the Gateway Arch is falling. We have the Mississippi River, which is rising. It's flooding all downtown St. Louis. This is in broad daylight. We have tall buildings. I'm seeing this fire truck and ambulance. The streets are sinking. Buildings are falling. People are getting killed broad daylight. Now, when this video's over, this Nardi friend of mine would look at me and say, my name's Ray Raymond. They call me Raymond. My dad's name was Rudy. They call him Ruda. But they would say, this is going to happen, but we will intervene. There was, I have my meetings at Bowling Alley the first Monday of every month. All my meetings are taped. Some of them actually have come into my meeting. Nobody can see them because I have to get this information out.
Yes.
Wherever I speak. And, you know, I've done that because the whole thing is that they know the greed and the disease down here. And for your viewers that are listening to this, when the reptilians came down here, it's the two-legged lizard people. They're one of the bad people I met. My late father met them too. They poison our water. They poison our food. They took the frequency from Mars, Moon, and planet Earth at the lowest peak because we were controlled. And you know some of the stuff that was going down there. They were even killing some of us. Well, you can thank God for these Procidians from the planet Kela or Kela. I'm talking about my friend Tolik, the 12 Andromeda Council planets. Now, I never met them or these real good vegetarian reptilians. Back in January, February 2011, they knew the weakness of the Hydra and Draco Greys and the Orion Greys that I'll be talking about out of the 32. And the bases they had down here, they shot a sonic blast. They blew up all the reptilian bases and Orion Gray bases, killed a bunch of them. A lot of them are standing trial today with this Andromeda Council. And it caused a 5.0 earthquake. Now, what the Procidians and the vegetarian good reptilians were worried about, they might have killed some of our humans causing this earthquake. There's only 250 reptilians down here.
Yes.
Okay. We're humans. We're multi-billion beings. 368 years ago, so we're probably talking in the 1600s, we were supposed to evolve. It's our time to evolve now from 3D to 4D. We're going to turn from a carbon to a crystal liquid. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie Knowing with Nicolas Cage. Okay. The last 15 minutes the ETs with the big wings, if you take them wings off, that's kind of what we're going to look like. We're going to be taller, slimmer. The men will appear to be 30, 35. They'll look that young. So, Thomas, me and you will look younger.
Good.
The women, for Tana and all them, will be taller. They will appear to look 20, 25. You're not going to eat that much. But the ones, and when this happens, it will be quick. But you have to understand, as humans, we're used to dates and times down here. The star people, it's an event that will cause visitation contact. There's a craft out there with 5,000 crew aboard, 30 different races. One of them races is our cousin. They're chunky. They're actually on Mars, too. I'll get into Mars later on. But this craft has an orb light in it that goes to all the worlds for contact visitation. It takes an event. Now, from what I get from my Fab Four, this is 2014. I just met him August 21st, 1:05 in the morning, St. Louis time. Anyway, this asteroid that's coming through will not hit planet Earth. It will come by Mars. If this does come by, even our planet, this will cause magnetic earthquakes, which could cause an event for contact visitation. They also, this has been my life for over 50 years.
Yeah.
And I talked to my late father, because he's in spirit, how right we were on some of the things we were coming up with. And one of them is, this is my personal, I'm just a messenger here, opinion, but they have an opinion that kind of goes with me. The year 2017, I personally think, is the year we're going to have contact visitation. My guys, my Fab Four, have said that a major, something major in the year 2017 will happen for us. But the other thing you have to remember, from 2014 now all the way up to that year, there's going to be a lot of changes, a lot of different things happen here. When I had talked to my people, this was back in 2012, and it's hard to get dates from the star people.
Yes.
Yes.
But they gave me a ballpark between July 3rd to the 15th, because the reptilians and the Orion Grays were going to set off the new Matrix fault line. And they told me to tell my people, give 6 cases of water, battery operated, anything battery operated, nothing plugged in, blankets, just in case the grids went down, if our people pulled something, you know who I'm talking about.
Yes, yes.
If the grids did go down, the star people would throw their satellites out. We'd only be out down for 3 hours. But they still, to this day, keep saying, tell your people to keep doing this, because this is going to protect everybody. And if the people that are listening don't think this is going to be happen, you know, it's up to you to take care of yourself, your family. I'm just a messenger. I get this out in my meetings. Anything vital I get from my Fab Four, I get it out. whether it happens or not, because these guys have never lied to me. These guys have been my friends for over 50 years.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Of the bad ETs that you and your family have encountered, how difficult it was it for you to come through those experiences, and did other good ET friends help with that?
Well, it wasn't easy. I mean, 12 years old, you know, I'm a little kid, and I'll give you an example. We met the praying mantis. Now, these praying mantis, and remember, we got little tiny green ones. They're the ugliest things you ever seen. They're supposed to be real spiritual and loving. Now, I'm not saying that's not true, because I think there's an East and a West.
Yeah.
But the ones that treated my dad bad, pushed my dad down. Now, I was 12 years old. I kicked one of the shins, and then I jumped behind my dad because I was standing up for my dad, but I was only 12 years old, scared as hell, crying. You know, you're standing in a giant craft with 6 to 7 feet tall giant ants, and you think they're about ready to just, they got a mouth yay big, about ready to eat you. And then you hear this telepathic voice, we're your friends, we're here to give you information, we're not here to harm you. The bad ones, the information they didn't care if we made it, okay? Same way with the reptilian lizard people, because here's what the reptilian lizard people wanted to do. So your people kind of understand this. Tolik's on the same page with me and his Drama Council. Their agenda was this. The entire Milky Way, there's 20 different planets out there, humanoids, different color hair, eyes, skin, look something like us, and planet Earth. Their agenda, we would have all been reptilians. But you can thank the Procidians, the good vegetarian reptilians, for what they did, because the other good star people were watching them for a long time, telling them they couldn't do this. What you have to understand, like your Illuminati, Cabal, all the bad ones through the years, just remember the bad ones want to control this planet and wipe out humanity. The good ones are here to protect us. There are ships around this planet now that are close that you can't see. The blue people, there's two of them. You got the blue warriors, you got the spiritual blue women. The blue warriors are underneath this planet right now. They have bases here. They're programmed that if anything happens, to take care of us.
Are these known as the Agathans, right?
Was that different? It's very possible. The answer they gave us were the Blue Warriors. These guys, I got them right here. These guys are from the eighth dimension. They're about 7-8 feet tall. They're real muscular. And the blue females, which float off the ground, they're real spiritual and loving. You know, they were all with the same message of, you know, protectors and watchers of this planet. And they have a lot of bases down here. I actually met a real angel by the name of Catherine with wings. They've got bases down here forever. They love this planet. They're always around water and sunlight on their planet.
So the blue people, are these what the movie Avatar was based on, or is this the same group of people that was recorded in the Indian text?
There could be that I don't know for sure. Just when I met him, I asked, and when even my dad was alive, we asked what they were, where they were from. They would either majority would give the dimension. The only one who gave us the planet was the Seahorse people. With my dad, never met them. Or they'd be from another dimension. The star women, they're actually down here. They're blonde and long black hair. They have a star emblem on their jumpsuit. They wear ray guns. And you could put a blouse and a pair of jeans. Their eyes are real slanted back. But you wouldn't even know it if they were dressed like that. They have bases down here. They're from another galaxy, far away. That's how far these star people are coming. And then you got the cat people, 9 to 10, 12 feet tall, which I know you got pictures. I'm just kind of rambling off.
Yes.
These other bad ones were these guys in silver suits with two antennas with a light for their face. When the light would blink, they talked telepathically. They could care less if us humans made it down here. But to kind of answer everybody's question, we do make it. And these star people, there's 28 good. Not because they're my friends and my late fathers and my late grandfathers. They're all our friends. They're here to protect us. They're here to make sure we go through this smooth, going from 3D to 4D. And this will happen. I'm not God. I'm just your average person. I'm a messenger. And when I get close, which I'm getting close, but like I said, it will be an event with the star people. We are used to a date and a time. It doesn't work the way we think as humans. And there's going to be some bad stuff happen, but the good's going to outweigh the bad. And you got to remember, the Andromeda Council, Tolis 12 planets, have put this planet in slow motion so nobody would get killed or hurt as we go through this. And, like I said, it'd be a little while before I meet my guys next. So I was fighting for my life, and the reason I'm saying this is what I'm about to say. We're not in spacesuits. We're in a T-shirt and jeans, okay? These people are coming from long dimensions, planets, galaxies. There's germs. Their crafts are really spotless. We're touching. We're hugging. I got my little 3-inch guys all over me. They're real high-pitched. They call me... It's something like Raymond, Raymond, but it's a lot higher than that. They're the neatest things you'd ever want to meet. They really want me to go to their planet, Thomas.
Yes.
They have the power to shrink you to their size. They also made some of the crop circles. It takes them about 7 to 10 seconds to do it, but not all the crop circles. It's a reconnaissance team that I meet on this giant cigar shape or flying saucer. There's many Nordics, there's many Serpo Greys, many elephant people, many my little 3-inch guys on this craft. But when I'm in this meeting room, it's a big red, looks like a pyramid table, all colored chairs. The Serpo Greys are on one side, the Nordics are at the end. The elephant people are to my right, and my little 3-inch guys are all over me. But this is where we have the meetings. But here's what happened, because I was getting into telling your people that we're not in spaces. I got real sick. I have Agent Orange prostate cancer, borderline diabetic. And they kind of give me a little cure for my cancer, and I'll kind of say what that is in a minute. But I was getting real sick, and I was meeting my guys on my TV. It's off. And I said, we either keep meeting like this, or you got to do something, and I can't go back on your craft. So what they came up with is a protective shield that protects me from the time I leave my car to the craft to the room. So that works out pretty good. But the antidote that they gave me for my cancer, and it may be for all cancers, is apricots and baking soda. And they said this should cure my cancer, so I'm going to see if it does.
That's awesome. Well, we should look at that.
Yeah.
I'm going to apologize to the listeners because we're still getting issues with my mic, not yours. And I think it's to do with the blog talk. I've been on this phone all day, and it's not acting like this. Right. The next, I want you to talk a bit about the Serpo Greys, Ray, because your initial contacts, if I'm not mistaken, were of the abduction ilk. How did this develop into them being one of the Fab Four, so to speak?
Well, because can you hear me?
Yes.
The craft that, and my father met him too, the Nardiques, the Serpo Greys, the Elephant People, and my little three-inch guy, were all on this craft. And I was with my dad the first time we went to Serpo. Like I said, they're vegetarians. And then the last two times was by myself. We were also taken to like a star outer space. We got to see, well, I got to see the planet Earth three times. I can understand why everybody comes to this planet. It's the most beautiful planet I've ever seen in my life. And we made friends through all these years, well, especially me. And, you know, I got friends in my meeting room. I got close friends that, hey, Ray, is there any way we can, you know, it doesn't work this way. It has to, you know, there has to be permission. It has to be exact. And I'm not going to sacrifice my life or the life of my friends until this is exact with them for me to pull this off. Down the road, I'm going to try this because I've done a lot for them, and I think that the certain people I'm going to take with me that will be able to touch these people, go on the craft, and if we're real lucky, take pictures. When my late father was alive, to show you how hard it really is to get any kind of proof, they had these ray guns, these Nardiques. It was yellow, green, red, had a red button. It was the weirdest looking ray gun we ever seen. It was outdated. They were going to get new ones. Well, this Nardique was explaining to me and my dad, it had four white buttons on the side. The first button was still. The second button was stun. The third button was disappear. And the fourth button was blow up. We really thought we had a chance because it was outdated to take one back with us, but it didn't work out that way. And then again, when me and my dad would have had it, we didn't know who the right people would have been for us to turn it over to. So, but we got close. That was the only time. They don't care if you take pictures of their craft, okay? And that's just the way it is. You know, I get people constantly saying, I'm ready to come off of this planet. If there's any way I can go with. It just doesn't work that way, Thomas. It has to be permission, and everything has to be exact. Because if you raise your arm, they think that's a threat. You'll disappear.
Wow.
You know, and I can't blame these people because now we got our guys. I'm talking about the military. They do nothing but shoot at these people instead of talking to these people. They're doing it now, but when they're doing it to these, they're doing it to the bad ones. They're not doing it to the good ones. But, you know, this has been my life for over 50 years. We were educated to figure all this out. And when I, here's the other thing. When I'm getting ready to say something to these people can read your mind before you say what you're going to say, but they let us say it anyway. And when I ask something vital, they'll say, Raymond, you're not ready for this. Or when it gets close to something that where we're at, they're going to let me know what they're going to do. Like everybody's scared about this Armageddon. What I was told by my Fab Four, there's going to be two safe haven dimensions on the left and the right that we would see. Plus, they would come and take some of us off this planet if something seriously happened. There wouldn't be one human touch. Because remember, you got the Blue Warriors down here. You got the, matter of fact, all 28 good ones are ready. There's 6 million hybrids programmed to come down here to help us too. I mean, they got this thing maxed out to the T. They're going to make sure that us humans, it's our time to evolve to go from 3D to fourth dimensional. And your Andromeda console, which is Tolik's people, they deal with 3D, 4D, 5D, and all the way up to sixth dimensional. What I heard from my guys, because they're a higher power, nothing against Tolik's people, they're all smart. They're a galactic federation. There's probably 300 worlds in this union. It's all good star people. That when we get into the sixth dimension, this is way down there, so there's nothing to worry about, but I'm just giving you information. There's no bad no more. It's all good. We're complete different creatures.
Yeah.
But as we go to step 3, 4, 5, there's always good and bad. There's barriers out there in outer space that the super spiritual ones protect. The only ones that I know of, you can ask, I'll even ask Tana on this, is the Silver Legion are the only ones that can go through these barriers. And that's what my people have said. So I think Tanya has talked about that too. I'm not sure.
Recently, all these four beings, the Fab Four, are they affiliated with any particular group? Or is it like separate entities?
It's a galactic federation. You can actually use the word union. There's 300 other worlds that are affiliated with this galactic federation. These are the good outweigh the bad out there. There's good and bad out there. There's good and bad down here. You want to understand it. The other thing is these people have lives just like we do. There's a planet out there. I don't know where it's at. This is what I was told by my guys, and I'm sure Tolik was too. They're engineer star people that do nothing but work every day like we do, designing these beautiful, exotic UFOs for all different planets. That's all they do. Okay?
Yes,
then
yes.
You got whatever out of the 28 and the four bad, 32. All these people have lives just like we do. But they're concerned about us. They're concerned about this planet. They're protectors and watchers of this planet. If we don't turn everything around, and they know we're doing this, we're going to be like the dinosaur, Thomas. We ain't going to be here. Planet Earth will always be here.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Another question. At the top of the hour, I'm going to shut the show down and reboot it, because this sound is, from my end, is awful, and we'll see if we can fix that.
Okay.
So the show will go down for a couple of minutes. Is there any changes or recent changes to the organization upstairs of late, like, for instance, a merging of groups?
There's three tall whites. The tall whites that were working with our military that I'm sure a lot of people don't know about, but anyway. Terry Lang, which I interviewed, she's a assistant director of MUFON in Florida. She came to picture 10 years old because I interviewed her and Debbie Zingemeyer, who is the Missouri director of MUFON, and she's on the board of directors. Debbie has her meetings the third Wednesday of the month. I have mine the first Monday of the month. She had Terry Lang, and that's how I got a hold of Terry Lang.
Yep.
These were kind of ugly, tall whites. And then there's what you call the tall white warriors, which are on the backside of the moon. They were called in by I think Tolik's drama console, just in case. And then you got the Procidians. When this craft with this 5,000 crew aboard, 30 different races, which is accompanied by the Procidians, they're two giant flying saucers the size of cities, just in case anything happens. There's only 250 reptilians left down here. But when they do come in our atmosphere, whenever this happens, now I'm just saying that whenever this happens, I don't know when it's going to happen, they're going to want everybody to see these crafts, okay, which everybody will.
Yeah.
And like I said, it'd be an event that will cause visitation. When this happens and they do come down here, it won't be a day. They will be teaching us, working side by side with us humans, with new technologies. And when all that process is done, however long it takes, then many will come, and they will be good ones.
Yes.
And like I've been saying earlier, you know, this is the information I get from my guys. And me and Tolik, we talk a lot. Me and Alfred Weber, we're real good friends. And but me and Tolik are on the same. We always use the word confirmation because we'll hear David Wilcox or Alex Collar say something we said, and we act like little kids because, you know, we said it. I never met these guys.
Yeah.
I've heard of their names. And
has there been any changes to the structure of the alliances upstairs?
For the good. And I don't know what, is this a question from the chat room?
Yes.
Yeah, there's been
I think the person wants to know is the Andromeda Council still as it was, for argument's sake, 12?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's 12 different ambassadors of Tolik's Andromeda Council. Yeah. They have meetings every day. Tolik talks to his people telepathically, and when Tolik goes up there, he's in his so being, 7'4". I don't know what he looks like, but that's his people. See, Tolik wanted to ask his people about my Fab Four if they were in this Galactic Federation.
Yep.
And what we found out is my guys are a higher dimensional being, which is good, but it's no cut down to Tolik's people or Tolik.
No.
Okay? It's just that they're a higher dimensional being. They're smarter, you know, but there's no cut down here because they all work together. And when I was talking about the year 2017, me and Tolik talked about that. But he's right on the page. And, you know, I've been in this for over 50 years, and Tolik's a major player in this. The Drama Council's a major player. My guys are a major player. Alfred Weber's a major player. Lisa M. Harrison, sitting in Australia, is a major player. I give the credit to all them people. I'm just doing this out of the goodness of my heart. From my late grandfather, my late dad, and the people on this planet, because I want to see what's been said to me, same way with Tolik, what's going to happen. This is going to be a more beautiful planet, a more peaceful planet than ever before, and these people that have been running the show, now mind you, they have been talked by the star people, all the biggies in the countries. They're coming through the people now, okay? These things are going to change. Your Illuminati, Cabal, they have a choice. They can turn around or they can go to the Hydra Draco planet reptilians. And if they decide to do that, they can never come back here. This is the information I get. I don't have to...
Do you have... Has there been any information passed on where this planet is in complete quarantine? So basically what I'm saying is at this time, until a certain event takes place, no one can come in and no one can come out, can go out.
I would say yes, because you get a lot of crafts around this planet that are ready to intervene. We're talking good ones here. Anything that comes in that ain't supposed to come in at this time, they take them out. Yeah.
But is there an actual quarantine of craft coming in and or craft leaving at this time? Have you been given that knowledge?
Not that knowledge, no. Just that they're around our planet. The ones that are underneath the ground on this planet Earth, they have bases down here. They're ready to do what they're programmed to do. And that's kind of where we're at. And you got some of them walking amongst us. Like I said, these star women from another galaxy, you put a T-shirt and a jeans on them. The Nordiques, you put a T-shirt and the only way you're going to tell a Nordique, his eyes don't blink. That's the only way you're going to tell a Nordique.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay, we're at the top of the hour. That sounds a bit better. I'm going to close the show down and reboot it and see if this fixes the echoing in the blog talk show. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Bye for now.
Thank you.
Hi all, and welcome back to the second hour. Hopefully that sounds better. It sounds better to me. Driving me nuts that on the first hour. So we'll continue with this second of two-hour show with Ray Kozelandich. I'm sure you all found our first hour very interesting. I know I did. And Drake's still with us. And Ray, what would you say was the greatest thing you've been taught or learned from them? What did you take with you from them?
All of them were different and amazing star people. I mean, you know, 12 years old, I'm 66 now. We were given the greatest, I could speak for my late grandfather and father, the greatest education ever. We were blessed, you know. We didn't ask for this. I had my childhood, and I had this other life. You know, I got a lot of friends. I got a lot of friends everywhere, but I got a lot of friends out there now. But they're our friends. They're not just my late father, my late grandfather, and myself. They're all of our friends. And to know that how many really are out there, it's way out there. The number is so far-fetched. This is so massive, it's beyond us.
Yeah, beyond comprehension, really.
It really is. And I mean, but these people are real. They exist. I'm not an artist. It took me 6 months. Jenny Blankenship, she spoke in my meeting. She's a healer, a spiritual Indian. She's a great artist. We worked this out together. She came down to the T of what these people look like, the way they're dressed. You know, I wish I had, and I'm sure a lot of people are saying, why, you know, you could take all the pictures you want, but I'll tell you what's going to happen. They're going to melt that film, they'll melt your camera until it's time for the way that we want it as humans. It's just too hard to get any kind of proof. And like I was saying in your first hour, me and my dad had a shot for this outdated ray gun, but it didn't happen. Uh-huh. And then again, if we would have got it, we didn't know even back in that time who the hell to take it to, or if we would have got it back. Or not saying we couldn't have took pictures of it, you know, it's just that it didn't happen, but that was the closest we ever got to bringing something from...
The danger is you lose trust with those people as such.
Yeah, and I would never do that.
Yeah.
And I want to keep their trust. You know, all these people are my friends, my late father and late grandpa, and the Fab Four. I went to the elephant people and the Nordiques because they kind of take control. They can speak our language and telepathically. And I looked both of them in the eyes and I said, are you guys about done with me? And like I said, they call me Raymond. They go, Raymond, you're the one. And that kind of told me they're going to be in my life for the rest of my life. Now, if I get a chance to go to the Nordiques planet, just for the education, I would do it.
Yes.
As bad as the 3-inch guys want me to go to their planet and to shrink me to their size, and I came back and I didn't come back my size, I got a cat that would probably chase me around my apartment trying to eat me. So that kind of made that decision towards the Nordiques.
Yeah. To clear something up, you mentioned in the first hour, you called them Procydians. Is this the Procyon race?
Our Procyon, that's it. I say that name wrong. Yeah, Procyon, I'm sorry. I kept saying Procydians. Yeah, Procyons. They're from the planet Kela or Kayla. These are from the Adrama Council. These are Tolik's star people. And but these are the people that I was told by my guys, my Fab Four, that this good vegetarian reptilian knew the weakness of the Hydro and Draco reptilians, And that's how they got to, you know, blow up the bases. And
what we understand, you know, the Procyon race were dedicated to the freedom of Earth due to their own planet being destroyed by Draco and Hydra. So that they took on the mantle to take them on, and obviously they've arrived here to help here as well, which is good for us.
Yeah.
Unlike the Alcyons.
You got that, the Galactic Federation. I call it a union because I'm an ex-auto worker. We have unions down here. But to me, that's what it means. And I think Tanya's Silver Legion's probably in that too. I'm not sure. Is she on the show tonight too?
Yes, she'll be on shortly, 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay. But another thing I want to say, you want me to keep talking?
Let me see what sort of questions we've got here. How expansive is, I don't know whether you'd be able to answer this question, but how expansive galactic territory-wise or universe-wise is the Draco Empire?
Well, now it's cut down to 250 reptilians, so it's...
Yeah, that's on this planet, but I'm talking about further out.
Oh, further out?
Is it still very prevalent, or is it drastically reduced?
It's reduced. They're back at their planet. I did hear, this is kind of hearsay, but I heard it, I don't call it hearsay from my guys. There's a worser reptilian, worse than them. I have no idea where the hell they're at. But, yeah, because a lot of them are actually getting, with the Drama Council, going through court, criminal charges. And, again, the ones that went back to their planet, and as we go through the frequency from 3D, when we get to 4D, the reptilians can't even touch us anymore. And the 250 that's left down here will either disappear or go back to their planet.
Is that because basically the playing field's been leveled by us going 4D? Because obviously they've been using higher D tech.
Right. Yeah, you higher your frequency. You got to remember, they put the frequency so low. That's what was controlling us for all these years.
Yes.
Okay? We were kind of like prisoners. And we're expendable. The old saying, I'm an XGI. It's always our kids that fight and die for this country, for their kids, okay? I got educated both ways, you know, with what goes on here and from them. And the ones that, like the Seahorse people, their planet was, whatever they messed up on was dying. Now, whether they corrected it, I don't know, because they were supposed to get back to me. They never did. And but these other star people, the Hmong people, these guys are from the 15th dimension. They're about 1 million years in technology. They have 7 fingers, 7 toes. They got suction cups on their fingers. They're 6 to 7 feet tall. They fly in what you would say a birthday size flying. Looks like a birthday cake flying saucer.
But like the Close Encounters one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're in brown robes. They're ball-headed. They got slanted, big round eyes with these stars around their belt. They wear these big tongs like back in the biblical days. Oh, and I met the biblical people. You know, these people were from 2,000 years ago. It's a husband and wife. They're protectors and watchers of this planet. And we have a lot of intelligent people with technology beyond our wildest dreams. And we're going to learn all this as we go forward. And things are going to change down here. And this is what it's all about. It's our time to evolve as humans. And we're a main player. there's 12 planets out there that actually use our DNA. Because as smart as these people are, they did something to their DNA that messed up their population. Back in 1959, the population of a Serpo Gray was 650,000 strong. Today it's, I think, over a billion. These are really friendly grays. You got all kinds of grays.
Were these the Serpo Grays? Were these the ones that were part of the program in 1964?
Are you talking about the...
There was a program that was kind of gone. It went into great detail
with our military.
And no, it there was a program between the U.S. military and the planet Serpo,
right,
whereby
yes.
So many of what appeared to be U.S. military would go on their craft, and it took nine of our months to get there.
It's the story I heard, which I really think is true. Serpo is S-E-R-P-O.
Yes, it's the same. It's the exact same.
Okay, if you go search it,
yeah.
I think they talk about 11 astronauts. What I got from my Fab Four was 13.
Right.
11 male, 2 female.
Because
now, remember,
that was what was hinted in the Close Encounters movie, is when they were dropping people off. That was part of that Serpo program, as I understood.
Okay. But they were, you have to remember, there's no time and space. Forget your watch.
Yes.
So what happened, there was this, the story I get, giant Navy aircraft carrier, giant UFO, Serpo Gray flying saucer, that had made an agreement with our military for having these 13, but I think in the story it's 11, to go live on Serpo for 2 years. They supplied the craft with 2 years of our food for these astronauts. You want me to keep going on that?
Yes.
And what happened was, 11 came back and died mysterious deaths. 2 of them are still living up there, which I know they could because, you know, we can eat vegetables. They eat vegetables like we do. They drink this green slime. We couldn't drink that because they said it would kill us. But I really think that story's true. But I heard it through my guys. It was 13. And the way the story goes, when you... research Serpo, it's 11. So, yeah, there was something to it. But they made an agreement with these grays, these Serpo grays. They're real friendly. And I don't think they'll ever have an opportunity to do it again, though.
Right. Now, we've heard of there's many, there's good and bad in all of the different species, different races, and different star systems. What's your opinion of the mantids, and both past and current?
Praying mantids?
Yeah.
Like I said, I think there's an east and a west. Because Margie Kay, who's the assistant director of MUFON, she's a top psychic remote viewer. She actually communicates with a praying mantis that is real friendly. She calls him her meaning. We have a lot of good ones out there. We didn't meet the good ones. We met the bad ones. And, you know, they're really ugly, but... I'm not saying there isn't good ones out there. Through talking to Margie Kay, I'd have to say yes, Margie would lie to me. Margie Kay and Debbie Zingemeyer, actually, Debbie Zingemeyer is a Missouri director of MUFON, Missouri, and on the board of directors. Both of them are real good friends of mine. She was the first one to interview me on the phone for 2.5 hours. And I knew what she was trying to do. We're real good friends. She was trying to trick me. And I said, Debbie, I know what you're doing. It ain't going to happen. This has been my life for over 50 years. Well, Margie Kay was getting the same messages telepathically that I was getting in person. And Debbie said, I got to get you guys together. So of all places, we met out at Fairmont Racetrack in Collinsville. And they had their cameras there. Margie got her new batteries out. As soon as she put them in, they went dead. Well, Debbie had her cameras there, and everything worked. And she told Debbie to shoot her camera straight up because it was a giant flying saucer, which was my friend's watching this because I have to get the information out.
Yeah.
And then Margie felt something else weird. She could see my little 3-inch humanoid guys over my head. Well, we were out there for 2.5 hours through the interview. When we left, Margie said, my little 3-inch humanoid guys, she's from Kansas City, Missouri, followed her all the way home.
Oh.
And we're talking to her. Well, I went out to Kansas City 2011 to speak. Debbie went with me. Now my 3-inch humanoid guys and the Nardiques were actually there in that room. I was speaking to about 400 people because I have to get the information out. But we were speaking for about 3 hours. We went out in the parking lot. Everybody down there is great. They all ask questions. We were out there for another 2.5 hours. We're getting real tired, and I go, Debbie, we got to go.
Yeah.
Now, we're going down Highway 70, and it's all farmland. There is a military base pretty close to Columbia, Missouri. And all of a sudden, now this is nighttime, out of the corner of my eye, because I'm sitting shotgun, this light, white light, just lifts up the whole farmland. And Debbie's driving, so she can see it out of her corner of her eye. I don't know what that noise is, Thomas. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
So she had this enormous jeep.
Yes.
Hello?
It's okay.
She had this enormous jeep, brand new. Something hit the tarp of her jeep. We swayed back, and she almost lost control of the jeep. And she looked at me, and she goes, that was a bird. I can't say what I want to say on your show. I said, a bird? That was friggin' Rodan. So we were coming close to Columbia, Missouri, and I said, well, get off. There was a QT. You stand on one side of your bumper, and I'll stand on the other side. We'll look on your turn. There wasn't a scratch. So we're getting real close to where my car was. We're about 15 minutes each from where we live. So when I got home, I was putting my luggage up, and I was going to listen to the last 45 minutes of Coast to Coast. I was laying on my bed. And like I said, my guys would come on my TV, my TV's off, and I could hear my little 3-inch humanoid guys yelling my name real high-pitched, Ramon, Ramon. So there's usually 8 of them on my TV, or always in a group of 8. And they were letting me know it was them that caused that white light and hit her jeep. And also let me know that they were, you know, down there listening because I have to get the word out. Now, the only time...
Ray, can I, at this point, you've spoken about the Silver Legion, and at this point I'm going to bring in the commander of the Silver Legion, and welcome back to Tanath.
Hi, good to talk to everyone here.
Hi, Tanath.
Do you want to ask about the Silver Legion, Tanath?
Oh, to her?
Sorry, I've got a cat trying to get my yarn ball. what is it you need me to ask?
Ray was mentioning about the Silver Legion.
Yeah. I don't know what, you know, like my involvement with the Silver Legion is direct and personal. So I'm usually not privy to what other people say about the Silver Legion. So it's always a curiosity for me to hear, you know, from what others say about us.
Well, the only question I have for you, sweetie, is this. This is from my Fab Four, their higher dimension. dimension. And they were just saying to me about the Silver Legion, I think, is protectors of the universe and planet Earth. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know if I'd, lay claim specifically to that title, but we definitely try. I try not to get too big for my britches or, lay claim to more than I can chew or, even get my people into more than they want to get involved in. But, yes, we are very serious about protecting this universe and this planet. We see protecting this planet as key to protecting this universe. So, yes, we're very invested in this, and we're very, very serious about our contribution.
And you got one hell of a group, and if I ever pass away, I would love to join your group.
Hopefully you don't have to, pass away to join us. we're hoping to be able to recruit in person.
Okay.
You
got my vote. The other question that my star people were saying, that there are barriers beyond outer space, but the only ones that are allowed to go through them barriers are the Silver Allegiance.
Well, this fits in a way with some of the things that I know from my own experiences. There's universe barriers. They may be talking about those. Typically, you can't go through a universe barrier and take somebody from another universe without permission from not just the source of the universe you're going into, but the source of the universe that you're leaving. And we have, I guess you could call it an open writ or whatever term you want to use, to recruit from other universes, at least those that have agreed to participate. We have to abide by a certain number of restrictions. For instance, we can't recruit somebody who's in the middle of something else. We have to wait until they're finished whatever their task is there. So, a lot of the beings that are represented to us in fiction, we'll go and we'll get them. But we'll get them after their natural lives are over, or after they've done what they're supposed to do. So, we might recruit somebody who showed up in a movie here, but we're getting them long after they've grown old and died. the off-screen stuff.
Well, you guys sound like you have one great unity of what you people stand for. And, I'm proud to be talking to one. And, it's great to hear this because, I'm at 28. That noise, I have no idea what that noise is. And but the people, the insects, the beings that I met, I speak for my late grandfather, my late father. I met all 32. My dad made half of them. My late grandfather met this 12-inch dwarf that kind of started everything for me and my late father, because he had told my grandfather that one of your sons and one of your grandsons would be chosen to meet many star people, which came true.
Have they ever said why? I'm sorry, just to interrupt, but why
no.
You and your father and your grandfather, do you have a blood connection to them or to the visitors?
Yeah, three generations. Well, we have relations out there. I mean, there's people in my meeting room that some of these women, I won't mention their names, know that their relations are Pleiadians. Some of them are the good praying mantis. Some of these women have a lot of hybrid children. They know the children are theirs. They actually seen them. It was our DNA. And I guess when this was set up with this dwarf to tell my late grandfather that me and my father would be chosen to meet many, in this case, 32, for information, which they all had. The four bad ones, it was bad information. The 28, it was all good. And this was all set up. We never asked for this. And I was telling Thomas early in the first hour that we were blessed. We were educated to the utmost. You don't go to school for this. And, you know, I learned a lot. And I really respect all the good star people out there. And I have no idea, like I was telling Thomas, the number is beyond us how many star people are really out there.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah, you know, we were once told by some other dimensionals that, you know, every single star out there has planets, and every single planet is inhabited, pretty much, in some dimension.
Okay.
So, yeah, as many stars as there are out there, there's civilized, there's people, right? There's groups.
Yeah.
Cool.
Right.
Yeah, Thomas.
Before the age of 12, did you have what is described as advanced knowledge?
Well, only thing I can say, and I've said it, from the time I was born to 11 years old, I have no idea. From 12 years old all the way to 66, I knew what, every time we met him, we had no missing time. My dad was implanted at 5 years old. If he had missing time, I would say yes. But from 12 years old, in the picture with me, 1959, all the way up to the time he died, because I made a quest for my late father. We were getting real close to the answers, that I would find out these answers, and I'm getting real close. But did I know if I had advanced knowledge?
Mm. The reason I ask that is a lot of people, myself included, at a young age had knowledge that we have no idea where it came from. It wasn't learned behavior from parents or books, and of course we didn't have the internet then, so I was curious whether that was the case with yourself.
Same here, yeah, because it was an education to learn from these people. To also learn how good and friendly these people were, and even the silver.
Sorry,
Legion.
I have to defend my ball of yarn from a cat.
Because I heard a lot about, I learned a lot of good things about the Silver Legion, and Tana, it seems like
it's
one
Tanakh.
Hell of a first.
Tanakh, yeah.
Sorry, it's Tanakh. Yeah.
Tanakh.
There are other people out there. Tanakh with the TH at the end.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, sweetie.
No, it's just that we, there's somebody else.
There's other people with very similar names, and we want to draw, you know, make sure that we have it clear.
Yeah, so
we have enough people who get us confused with other people. I had somebody accuse me of being Chloe, which Tommy can be most assured is not true.
So is Tanakh?
Tanakh.
Yes.
T-A-N-T-H at the end.
Double A.
Most people just call me Taff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Yeah. It's easier. We don't go into my full name. It's dragons like those names long.
You guys are really nice people, great people.
So,
thank you.
This 2017 date, and your knowledge that this planet will be free or has to be free before, prior to that date to so we achieve the ascension. Is that would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I would, because that's my personal, because through this 50 years of the education. The other thing is, with the Fab Four, they're saying it's a major year for us humans. So it's on the same pattern, and these people have never lied to me. You know, they've been my friends for over 50 years. As we're going through 2014 to that year, 2017, there will be a lot of changes. Maybe Tanakh can answer some of this, that maybe her people are aware of what's going on as we go through this. There goes the ocean, but I have nothing to do with that.
Right.
Your
family's
do...
from... Carry on, Tass.
Sorry. Yeah, we do know that there will be some major changes coming up the pipe. Many of them are unavoidable earth changes.
Right.
We also know that they are not... not required to be cataclysmic and not required to kill a lot of people. Like, everybody's all going, pole shift. Well, it doesn't have to kill you. You know, divorce
right.
yourself from the apocalyptic death thinking and envision, and this is not necessarily my advice to you, although you can take it as well, right? But divorce yourself from the apocalyptic doom and gloom and allow yourself to anticipate a scenario in which earth changes can occur, yet people don't necessarily have to be killed by them.
Right. I agree. The other, before you came on the show, which I was telling Thomas, that in order for visitation contact, us humans are used to a date and a time, it would be an event that would cause visitation contact with the star people.
Yeah, that's the thing, is we have a policy of not providing dates. Why? Because dates have a nasty habit of not occurring.
Right. They gave me two dates, but I understand, because I really pushed my guys, and the bad ones were going to try and set off the new Madden plot line, which they stepped in, and that didn't happen. And then... the Procyon and the new good vegetarian reptilians that knew the weakness of the Hydro and Draco reptilians shot a sonic blast in the year 2011, January, February, that blew up a lot of...
Did your people, like your contacts, confirm that independently? I mean, most of us here are familiar with Tolik's work. So, you know, anything you can independently confirm extremely useful.
Yeah, me and Tolik talk a lot. He's a real good friend of mine. He's got the 12 Andromeda console, which you know that. And,
familiar.
This really happened. The only thing they were worried about, and Tolik would agree to, is it caused a 5.0 earthquake, and they thought maybe they might have killed some humans in that earthquake and battle. They shot that sonic blast, which it wasn't like Star Wars, which it would have been worse. But yeah, that really happened. There's only 250 reptilians left on this planet.
Yeah, I knew about that. That roughly fits with our estimates as well.
Okay.
Although we have heard rumors of massive quantities of reptilians. We don't know whether those are Draco and Hydra reptilians or whether they're other groups.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, being mistaken for reptilians. It's a real swamp. It's hard to tell who's who. A lot of the different groups don't know about each other. Some of them know and aren't talking, you know. And you will have experienced this yourself. A lot of the times, unless they come in there specifically to tell you something, you got to ask. Otherwise, they don't talk about it.
I know they can look just like us, and they're... all kinds of things they can do. Yeah, we met them, but they were there for bad information. And Tolik would agree, because he checked out my Fab Four and found out that they were a higher dimensional being, which is okay. But me and Tolik talk a lot. We've become real good friends. Alfred Weber, Lisa M. Harrison. Lisa M. Harrison actually opened the door for... Alfred Weber, and Alfred Weber opened the door for Tolik for me. And a matter of fact, I'm going to have Tolik and Alfred Weber November 3rd at my meeting room, and Tolik will be the special guest, but Alfred's going to come on, because Tolik surprised Alfred last month, September 1st, at my meeting, and me and Tolik always talk. But yeah, they're both great people. They're major players, just like the Silver Allegiant are major players.
Right. You say your genetic line. Are you aware which where the progenitors of, or which planet or which star system you originated from? Given you are Yugoslavian, Croatian descent,
mm-hmm.
are you familiar with the beings that were that started that area and that language?
No.
What is your understanding of Tau Ceteans?
The only thing is I've heard of them. No, I don't know if they're good, bad, or what, but I've heard of that name.
That's okay.
Which I've talked to a Croatian girl that was trying to say that that's where I derive. I think as I went through this, I have something to do with the Nordics. We all have relations out there, and you would think it would be from your nationality, but I think it's not just based on that. It's based on something else.
Yeah, because as far as I know, there are no people on this planet who are, actual dragons.
You're a dragon. You're a dragon, ain't you?
I am, yes, but I'm not physically a dragon. I'm a human.
All right.
I'm an incarnate dragon.
Okay, but also do you have wings? Like a
not on this planet, but yes, actually they're not feathery, they're more leathery, and they're silver, or like metallic white. But yes, I do have wings. I actually have a form that I take. I'm a shapeshifter, which is mostly humanoid. I've got hair, I've got a chest. You know, it tends to make other humanoids a little more at ease. I've also got the wings and a little horn sticking out of the back of my head. Not the side, not the front, not the top, the back of my head, straight out. And long, pointy ears. I do have wings.
All I got to say to that is you sound fantastic. You got a voice, woman.
Yes, we've told her that. She's the voice. She uplifts so many people. Particularly our members, with their knowledge and understanding of things.
The other thing, Thomas and Kanath, you would both agree with this. There's a lot of people on this planet that don't even know what the hell's going on.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's very unfortunate, but, I mean, like, if they knew, then it would be the situation.
Right, exactly.
One of the questions that kind of comes up, well, what has the ET issue got to do with Earth or us being free from the cabal? What is your understanding that the two are separate or the two are mixed?
Your Illuminati cabal, the reptilians, they have a choice. Go to the Hydro Draco planet, never come back here as we go through this transformation, or they have a choice to change and be with us the way it's going to be down here in the future. There goes that water. Anyway, I'm going to try and speak over that. You people, I'm speaking of tonight, don't use money. You use energy or some kind of trade where probably in the next 10 or 11 years, there will be no money down here, and we will be using some kind of energy and trade as we go through this when the contact with the good star people that will happen in the future.
Yeah, that's right. Our economic system is completely different. We trade in energy and or in services or goods in kind, and a lot of stuff we do pro bono. Like, what we're doing here on the planet is completely pro bono. Earth will never see a bill. You know, we're not Blackwatch or Blackwater, you know. There's not going to be a bill coming up due. This is all pro bono, and it's pro bono because we think it's important not only for your survival but the survival of everybody in this universe that this planet is free.
I agree. I agree 100%. Have you ever heard of a guy's name of Valiant Thor?
Yeah, I've heard of him. I don't actually, like, I've heard of him terrestrially. I don't have any information on him from up there.
Okay. When I was telling you, Thomas, and this includes you, Kanav, Margie Kay, who's the assistant director of MUFON, at 10 years old, there was three times she kept seeing this face with his helmet, and his name was Valiant Thor. He's supposed to be from the planet Venus, and he told her to read a book. I can't even think of the name of the book, but I read this book. He was in this book and came down here with their book for us to kind of go by, but our military kind of shined that to the side. And,
are you talking about the Urantia book?
That could be it.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not fans of that. It doesn't represent how we experience the universe. If it is, yeah, there's no hierarchy like that, for instance.
I hate to say it this way. Would that be kind of like each one's Star People's, we use the word Bible?
Well, there are some groups up there that still have religion. But many don't. Many simply acknowledge the existence and try to work in harmony with Source, but don't feel the psychological drive to worship and or punish people who don't do what they think Source wants them to do. You know, so there's no worship, there's no persecution of people who aren't doing what you don't like from a religious perspective.
Okay.
There are groups that do, like, you know, I was shocked to discover that there are still cults, for instance. And, like, when I'm talking cults, I'm talking about, you know, the kinds of people who produce small fanatic groups in which they try to, you know, damage each other or themselves or other people outside.
For instance, this is
the Cult of the Black Sun, which has spread to this planet. Yeah, it exists.
Wow.
It's out there. You know, some of these Pleiadians, guess what? They're hip deep in it.
Wow.
Particularly the ones from Maya.
I kind of wonder about these Pleiadians myself. But no, because we got called stuff. Did you say you got a cat?
Yeah, we got a cat. She's very nice. She's named Mao. It's Cantonese for cat.
Cool.
Oh, no, not cats again.
You got a cat, Tom?
No.
Tommy doesn't like cats. This one likes to steal my yarn balls, and she's not allowed to. But she still likes to do it.
I hope I'm doing okay for you guys.
You're doing fine, right? You know, you're not here. You're here to tell your story. We don't prejudge. And judging by the feedback from the members, most are very interested. So it's...
Tolik, out of 10 star people, Tolik met my worm people. He called them slimy guy, which if you touch him, they are real slimy. But yeah, he met them.
We've run into all kinds. It's, I haven't met any of them physically. But I've met them a lot upstairs, you know, like some people who are incarnate down here don't have the ability to experience upstairs simultaneously. I can. It takes a lot of concentration, and it's kind of fuzzy. I can't see, for instance. I can hear by knowing, not really by listening. You know, I don't hear sounds. I don't see anything. But I can move around and do stuff, and I can feel stuff up there. And I've met quite a few very interesting things, including, and, you know, I say this as a Silver Legionnaire, who is used to running into things from other universes on a routine basis, including things that I didn't think had a presence in this universe and that I had chalked up to fiction and far enough away that we wouldn't run into them. And then I start running into them, and I'm like, what the heck?
Why
are there these guys over here? You know, things like that.
When I talked to you, Tanaf, I don't know if you've seen them, but I think you heard of the one-eyed Cyclops people.
I've heard of them. I don't know anything about them, but I've heard of them.
Yeah, they're real brilliant. These guys are 8 to 10 feet tall. They're from the fourth dimension. They fly in a giant egg-shaped orange, beautiful, because a lot of these meetings are at nighttime. Their crafts are just beautiful. And there's a planet out there, I was telling Thomas, that actually that's all they do is design these beautiful crafts for other planets. And they trade for energy for, I guess, the work they do with these other planets.
Cool.
Have you heard that?
No, but most of the people I know make their own craft. So, you know, it's certainly not beyond reason. You know, the universe is a huge place. And quite honestly, in this lifetime, I've only experienced, you know, a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a fraction ad nauseum.
Okay. Well, you guys are way ahead of me, especially you.
Well, I don't know about that. you know, we're all doing what we can, right?
Yes. Right. That was a quick 2 hours. Do you have, as a last parting shot, Ray, do you have any advice to the people of the world on how to prepare for this event that's coming?
Well, the people need to start to have belief and faith in what is out there that is going to help us and help us succeed and go smooth to transfer from 3D to fourth dimensional, and we'll have a higher frequency. We're going to change. This is going to be a beautiful planet, a more peaceful planet than ever. The technologies that we're going to learn are going to be unbelievable. And, you know, this is going to happen, and people need to, I still tell my people, plenty of water, battery-operated batteries, anything, batteries, blankets and all that. Just be prepared. Prepare your own families and yourself just in case you need this, but I think we're going to be all right without it, and these people are going to make sure that this is a smooth transition. For the ones that are ready, it's going to happen real quick. For the ones that ain't, it will take time, but eventually they will be fourth dimensional. Nobody's going to be left out.
Yes.
And we're going to make it. And that's kind of where I'm at. And as I go through this with my Fab Four, the information I get, you know, I get it out. I get it out in my meetings, and I get it out in shows like this. You guys got a great show.
Well, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to come on and tell us your story. And no doubt there'll be quite a few being educated this evening.
Okay.
A different perspective on in a lot of ways from some of the stuff they've heard previously, particularly some of the beings. So we'd like to thank you for that.
No problem.
Further down the line, if you've got any further updates, we would welcome you to come back on the show.
Sure. And it's a pleasure meeting you guys. Tanaf, Thomas, I love you guys. Again, thanks a lot. Anytime you need me,
Ray.
I'll be there for you.
Thank you, Ray.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Tanaf.
Yes.
Thanks for coming on.
Yes, and before I go, you know, I'm not on the Facebook. I'd rather not expose my family to, you know, the ridicule and the harassment that might come along with that. But, you know, I do understand that there are a number of listeners on Facebook, and, you know, I'd like to give a shout-out to you guys, especially I hear I got a champion, Sebastian, thanks. It's always nice to feel appreciated.
Good. Thank you for that. He'll be beaming at the moment.
Yeah.
He champions your cause very well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Champion your own causes too, right? You know, and
yes.
I don't want to be some kind of celebrity. I don't need followers or fans.
Yeah.
Honestly, what I need are people who are willing to walk with me to,
yeah,
you know, stand up and as people in their own right and do their work, them, you know, in their own right, be a part of this. Because
yes,
you guys can. We need you. Not just in the Silver Legion, but we need you on this planet. We need you to step up and follow your heart.
Right. Thanks very much, Taff. We've got another guest coming on for the final hour. It's about self-empowerment and upliftment. Her name is Katarina Edwards-Roy, and she'll be with us in 2 minutes. Bye for now, Taff. And
thanks.
You. Welcome back to the final hour. I hope you enjoyed that two-hour special show with Ray Kozolandich. This is a new guest to Cosmic Voice. Her name is Katarina Edwards-Roy, and she's going to hopefully uplift us and self-empower us all in the next hour. Katarina.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Busy with many things. I think it's about 2 weeks, possibly 3 weeks, since Dave Kelso, one of the members of Cosmic Voice, contacted me, and we sorted the little issue out, and eventually I managed to get round to tying you down, and here we are. So can you...
I'm actually very happy about that.
A brief bio of yourself or a history?
Okay. My journey into empowerment and awakening really started about 5 years ago when I was 16. And it was a very interesting journey. I know I sent you my bio page, but for the people who haven't seen it, I experienced a lot of illness very early on when I was younger, and through that journey, I was really needing to learn new ways of being, you know, because I had grown up in a society, you know, that is very much so a culture that is about perfection and about being a certain way and really sticking to the rules and the societal means. So I pretty much drove myself into the ground at a very early age and spent about 2 years being bedridden with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome and a lot of other autoimmune disorders. And in the past 5 years, I've been able to overcome that. And now what I do is I really reach out to others who are struggling with feeling victimized by their circumstances in life and do my best to uplift them and empower them through this, because suffering, you know, it's optional. You don't really have to suffer as much as you believe you do.
Yes. So was there a single event that changed things for you?
A single event. I honestly, it was a big, like, long string of things. And as Dave will tell you, he's been my friend for 2 years, and he's seen me through some of the worst, in terms of feeling victimized. But honestly, it's just been a lot of small things along the way that just overarchingly became a big thing, which was just this huge journey I've been on.
Yeah.
And, I feel like more than anything, it's been the things that have really, really, really shaped my perceptions have been often just the conversations that I would have with Dave. You know, I'd be sitting there on the phone crying, feeling extremely powerless and just completely out of control in my own life, you know, crying, being in pain, just feeling attacked by the world around me. And it would be the subtle shifts in perspective that he would give me that would show me, hey, you know, you have a choice right now. How do you want to perceive this? How do you want to interact with this in your life? And that those questions have been the most fundamental, I think, just asking myself those questions.
Yes.
Because they gave me the power back.
The personal power,
makes sense.
Which mm-hmm. Everyone has, do they not? No matter how bad the situation, the situation is correctable from within. I think too many people at times are looking for external sources to fix things when a lot of the answers are within.
That's very true. And they also assign a lot of blame onto the external. It's like, oh, it's his fault that I feel this way. Oh, it's her fault that I feel like this. She's making me feel this way. Or they are making me feel this way. Like the Illuminati, they're making me feel this way, you know. And people get into a rut mentally. And what I see happening with so many people who are in the awakening movement is that it's almost like they need to awaken from their awakening, because when they awaken, it's like they're blaming everybody out there. But the real, true awakening is taking ownership of the stuff that's going on inside of you and really empowering yourself to get to a place of mastery and not allowing the world to rattle you and to throw you off so much.
Yes, the world of illusion as such. Yeah, well, one of the things I've come across as although it's improving as such is personal responsibility, and we're primarily about freedom and removing the cabal and all these banking families and the elites, and we used to have an ET show, we just had an ET show, and one of the things I used to say before I did the radio show was, it's each and everyone's fault we're in this mess. because too many times you'll go, no, it's the bankers. Well, yes, it is. But why have each and every one of us allowed it to happen? And I'd like you to perhaps talk a bit about personal responsibility, in, if you could.
Yes, of course. So many people who care about changing the world and they want to do something like in it, like, you know, they want to wake up the world, you know, they go out there with these really good intentions, but they're basically working with a ball and chain around their leg. And this ball and chain is their feelings of insecurity and fear and unprocessed grief and hurts from the past. And all of that is just really making their life in the current moment like 10 times harder than it really needs to be. And, you know, when I say this, it's not to say that this is like New Agey spirituality. I mean, this is about plugging the leaks in your own integrity with yourself to allow yourself to not be distracted by the suffering in your own personal life so you can go out and actually go into the world and make a difference. Because when you heal yourself, you're so much more able to show up and heal the world. You know, people notice that things are different about you when you do this. And when you're taking responsibility for your life, you're more clear-minded, more reliable. You're less petty and irrational, and you're less reactive, and you stop allowing yourself to be so... you know that, like when people are just erupting all over the place. You know, they're just...
Yes. Yeah, there's lots of people erupting at the moment.
Yeah. So when you own your own shortcomings and insecurities, the world isn't really able to push your buttons so much. And instead of drowning in that victimization and the woe is me, you're more buoyant and resilient. And those are extremely important qualities to have when you're wanting to make a difference in the world. You know, Dave and I, we would joke that my dark shadow aspect is, you know, Ogarina. You know, I have this ogre that lives inside of me. But, you know, when I was rejecting it and pushing it away and really disowning it, it wreaked havoc on my life, you know, because I would have these long spells of depression that just wouldn't lift. It was because I was in such resistance to myself and I was shunning it. And, you know, it would come back full force by, you know, making me ill or, you know, giving me, like, a zit the size of Jupiter or, you know, making me get 3 bee stings in one day or, you know, like, just crazy things. But they had to do with the fact that I wasn't taking responsibility for my emotions and who I am, and I was shunning myself. Yes. So one of the biggest things that I can tell people is to really play with your shadow sides. You don't have to push it away and you don't have to reject the negative parts of you, but when you start bringing them into the light and bringing them into your awareness, you are able to dispel them, if that makes sense. Like they're power lessons.
Yes. Yes. So in essence, are you aware of like the mirroring effect? What basically what you're putting out, you're getting back.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people talk about that, but it's just like I wonder how many people really understand how it's happening all the time. You know, yeah. Dave says that the quantum mirror doesn't take coffee breaks.
Yes, I agree. So,
yeah.
Is the first step on this road self-discovery and then finding the inner demons, how deep it goes, and where would you like to go with that?
Well, I know that a lot of people that are on your show really are in the audience of, you know, listening to what's happening with the banksters and the Illuminati and all of that stuff, and I really wanted to address that for a moment. Yeah. Because we all know that the world is going to hell in a handbasket, so to speak. But, you know, part of personal empowerment is seeing that stuff, you know, and not shunning it. And then just allowing yourself to feel the feelings that arise and then understand that these feelings exist within you. And because they're being triggered in you. And when you overcome those feelings and fears by questioning your thinking and your beliefs, the whole world opens up to you and you're not any longer shackled by your fear. And that's a really important thing to point out, is that a lot of these shadows, parts of our psyche, are repressed fear and anger and sadness. And, you know, that's why people act so belligerently sometimes. It's just because they're afraid.
Yeah.
So.
Hiding insecurities.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I kind of chuckle to myself sometimes when I see people who, I live in Costa Rica, and there's a lot of expatriates that live down here. And a lot of them are people who are running from something in the United States. They're thinking the whole world's going to collapse, you know, the banksters are out to get us, the Illuminati, this, that, and the other thing. You know, they're running. And there's one person in particular who, he listens to Alex Jones about 6 hours a day. And, you know, he's probably one of the most belligerent and just harsh people that I've ever come across.
Yeah, I can tolerate about 6 seconds of Alex Jones. It's like somebody scratching their nails down a chalkboard. No.
Right. And so it's people like this who are out there who are wanting to, you know, make a difference in the world by, like, scaring people awake or frightening people into their empowerment. And it just doesn't work that way, you know?
No.
And so this person, you know, he walks around and tells everybody that they're ignorant, asleep sheep. And, you know, he is not very well liked in the neighborhood at all. And he kind of just achieves the opposite. So I just wanted to put that out there. First of all, like, there's just a completely different approach to empowerment that I'm speaking about. And it doesn't actually fall in the category of being New Agey, and it doesn't fall in the category of being, you know, the world's falling, Illuminati, banksters, blah, 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 you know, Alex Jones camp.
Yeah.
This is a middle path, one of awareness and just about ownership that transcends all that other stuff. So.
Yeah. Do you often find that... was a good story about the difference between the people who are awake and who are asleep. It's true to an extent, but from my understanding, 30% of the population were previously designed not to get it. So those 30%, doesn't matter what you tell them, they're not going to accept the information given. Now, the difference... What I and a lot of others experience is what I call the protective bubble they put around themselves. Like, this is not happening to me, and you know, the vaccines and all the other stuff that's going on. No, that's not happening because it's not happening in my sphere. And again, that's lacking personal responsibility until. Then they find that suddenly their sphere or bubble of protection that they put around them has been popped by one of their grandchildren's being vaccinated and they've suffered autism or whatever else. And then suddenly they're screaming, why isn't this being stopped? Why isn't this being helped? And, you know, it's, again, it's personal responsibility. I can understand that guy's frustration. Yes, he will be unpopular because... you're basically teaching people a truth that is outstanding, outside of their understanding, so to speak. Is that something you come across in your sessions as such?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's rather difficult.
Yeah. Just in my daily life, too, you know, I live around a very wide variety of people, and, you know, you learn discernment amongst, like, what you share with people. You know, I'm sure you've learned that, too.
Yes.
Right. You have to understand and feel people out for their level of readiness. and you don't really want to let all of your information out of the bag, because, you know, it's not worth your time or effort or any energy. I mean, I came across a gentleman the other day. He came up to my house, and he was purchasing something off of Craigslist from my husband. And, you know, within the first 5 minutes, I was hearing about his fibromyalgia and, you know, how miserable he is. And, you know, he was carrying an envelope to pay my husband for the item. And he had about $30,000 worth. He had $30,000 in the denomination colones in his bag, and he did not trust banks. You know, so I was sitting there listening to this gentleman, and, you know, listening to him complaining about his pain, and, you know, my husband made the mistake of opening up and saying, oh, yeah, my wife, she had fibromyalgia, and she got over it, you know, and he just, like, looked at me, and he gave me the meanest glare. He was just like, well, men have it worse, and, you know, and he was just so so clinging to his disease and his beliefs and his view of the world, and he completely shunned anything else outside of that. You know, the fact that I suffered for 2 years and was able to move past that disease, that was completely outside of his paradigm. So I definitely do come across these people, and I have learned how to deal with them. Just, you know, smile and, you know, allow them to have their belief systems, because my job is not to awaken the people who are not looking for it. You know, I'm there to be there for the people who are ready and looking for answers.
During the sessions that you've done, how do you deal with the ones that say they're ready but put up a resistance?
I play with them. You know, if they give me the permission, to invite me into their problem, and they start showing resistance within the session, you know, I'm a very playful person. I'm very fun-hearted, and, you know, you could kind of get that about me. But, you know, the ego, it really, really loves playing games with the person, you know. And so when you start playing games with the ego and start pushing buttons, and you're able to kind of attack it, it's almost like judo. You just kind of, like, have to weave in and out of people's perceptions. And eventually they kind of get to a point where they're just sort of like, oh my God, what just happened? You know, like, the look that gets on their face is hilarious, because, you know, they're not expecting you to be able to see through their bullshit.
Yeah.
So it's a very fun thing for me to do when people start getting like that. But, yeah, I mean, people can do that just in everyday life. You know, if you're met with resistance from somebody, you know, there are a million ways that you can approach it, but one of the ways that you don't approach it is by, you know, pointing it out point blank. You know, you kind of tease it.
Yeah. And so that basically you've got to try and guide away rather than force as such. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's your position on ego and the role it plays in people being up or down?
Can you repeat that?
What's your position on people with egos, both mm-hmm. elevated egos, and how they can address that? Because basically,
you mean like inflated?
Yes, basically, it's kind of masking something else, is it not?
Yeah, it's the false identity. You know, there's a word for it. It's the idealized self-image that we have. And people, I used to have one of those. It was very interesting to deal with. You know, I was 16. I was invincible. I was anorexic. I was completely self-absorbed, and I just thought I was better than everyone, so much more superior. And you know, I think it's an individual process for people to have to get to, because it's really hard to be humbled by someone else. But people that are like that, you know, life tends to humble them, you know. Like for me, I had to pretty much lose it all and, you know, undergo a deep process of deconstruction. And it was not pretty. So, you know, I don't tend to deal with people like that, because they are people who are, they have such inflated egos that they don't see that there's a problem. You know what I mean?
Yes, well, we've kind of dealt that with a lot of that in the alternative media as such. But egos have kind of ran amok, and what they failed to see is that is only helping prolong the situation. You know, everybody, stressing Cosmic Voice, you know, I received a fantastic letter praising me and Drake and Neil Keenan. I'm not too sure whether you're aware of Neil and the global accounts for what we do, but at the end of the day, we can't do that without the admins we have at Cosmic Voice, and without and the people who are members of Cosmic Voice and elsewhere, and in getting the message out. And it's the same with your venture. You know, you do your one-on-one, but you're hoping that person goes out and spreads the message, and eventually it has a knock-on effect. And so, you know, it's just because someone is at the forefront of it doesn't mean that they're any more important than anybody else. And too much has kind of played into the egos. I mean, you were talking about Alex Jones before, you know, his is kind of, you know, there's people who like Alex Jones served a purpose a few years back, and he woke, what we would say, woke some people up. But his mode of operation now is more than spent, in my opinion. And,
you mean you don't need all of his stores? You don't need all of his products that he sells in the store?
No, we don't need any of his links to Stratfor either.
Which
some of us are familiar with and some of us aren't. But, you know, he's gone his way, and that's fine for him. But, you know, everyone has a personal choice in life which way to go. Nobody asks, we don't ask anyone. We just had Tanath on. She's, we have people who think basically Tanath's the be all and end all, and she doesn't want to hear that, because it's not good, because you're giving your own power away. And one of the best things Tanath ever said, never put anyone above your own heart. And it doesn't matter who, whether you're religious or not, you are just as important as everybody else. And when people realize that, whichever God you pray to or worship, whether it's the source, creator, Lord or whatever, they are no better than you. And that is a stage of self-empowerment which you take on. We're all part of the same source as such. Good and bad, light and dark, and all the various religious constructs there is. No one's better than each other.
Yeah, and that's part of this pedestal illusion that people have, you know, and society teaches us to have that, you know, because we have the cult of the experts, we have the people who are just only taking doctor's advice, and they just kind of shun the opinions of other people. If you're not an expert, if you don't have letters after your name, if you don't have this credential and that credential, you know, you're nobody. But also the people who are out there, you know, on YouTube, and, you know, they're really, really soaking it up and, you know, almost being like gurus. You know, that's very telling as well. I mean, I think that one of the best ways to be able to tell if somebody is really speaking the truth or not is, what is it that they are telling you to do? Like, are they telling you to be empowered yourself? Are they explaining to you that they are no better than you? Are they humbling themselves? Like, or are they trying to present that idealized self-image to you? And are they trying to position themselves as being superior to you?
Yes. Yes, well, doctors in particular, they, you know, there's a reason why a doctor is called practice. You know?
Yeah.
Not
all. I know.
You know,
that.
It, they're basically practicing on you. And, you know, we sadly, you know, there's a lot of alternative on that particular subject. There's a lot of alternative medicines. And people go, well, my doctor doesn't believe in that. And you go, well, what makes him different to you? And the same applies with politicians. Most of them, anyway, are just normal, everyday guys who are in a position of perceived power. They don't necessarily have anything better, or and certainly a lot of them have a lot less knowledge than the people we have on our listening to our show. But there's always this incremental pyramid structure where someone's better than somebody else, and that's it's disempowerment, and it's done for a reason. And the populace here has been disempowered over many, many millennia, shall we say, a lot longer than people realize.
It's very true. It's very true. And when you start being an example of empowerment, it's very common that people reject that. They're like, "Oh, you're crazy. Oh my gosh, I can never do that." No.
No.
Because they're not used to seeing what that looks like.
Yeah. Well, you know, once you attain self-empowerment, you know, there's not necessarily, that doesn't mean to say that you have to go out and lord over other people who haven't. All you have to do is be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just be. You know, there's no difference to anything else. So, let me tell you. What would you describe as your expertise?
Belief deconstructing.
And
I think
And can you talk a bit about that, please?
Well, yeah, I mean, we have all of these societal memes and beliefs that we come into this world with, even being around in the culture that we exist in. There are beliefs in insecurity and worthlessness in, you know, I could never do that, just so much around limitation and not being able to do things. You know, you hear people that are in their 60s being like, oh, that technology stuff, I could never use that, blah, 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 blah. You know, people set up their world in such a way where there is an infinite amount of things that they can't do and only a very small amount of things that they can do. And then within those things that they can do, those things are difficult and hard and impossible and blah. You know, within people's language patterns and how they view themselves and how they exist within the world, I mean, they are setting up their own parameters. And I guess what I like to do with people, whether they pay me or not, I mean, this is just what I do because I've been doing it with myself for 5 years. You know, I question their beliefs. I help them really deconstruct them through, various different methodologies, just because, I mean, people are all so different. But, it really boils down to that sheer questioning. Like, you know, the doctor told me that I had fibromyalgia and that I was going to have to take pain medicine for the rest of my life and that I would just only get progressively worse over the years. Yet I haven't been in pain in 2 years and I don't take any medications at all. You know, so it's like, how did that happen? That happened because I shifted my belief systems around and I made it, I set up my reality in such a way that doesn't have to define me and it doesn't have to define who I am in this world.
Yes, I agree with that. Particularly on the health issue, I had a rather unfortunate incident with a bench saw and fingers. And I was told that I was going to lose both fingers. And I said to the doctor, I don't think so. So he says, no, you're definitely going to lose the two fingers. And I said, I don't think so. And he said, your nail won't grow back. I said, it will. Right from the off. And I've still got them. Yes, they don't look particularly pleasant, but they're still adequate, and I can work with them. So it's reinforcing your own empowerment and not allowing others to impose theirs onto you. And
right.
Particularly in the medical field, there's been lots of stories of recoveries by people just being positive.
And I want to even challenge that a little further. It's not even so much being positive. It's for me, I've found that it's just about removing the other stuff. You know, you don't even have to be in that super positive state that you're like super certain that it's going to happen. It's just more so like questioning the belief, like, well, why can't it happen? You know, you're kind of opening yourself to the possibilities of recovery rather than, just feeling so trapped by them. Because I think that a lot of the illnesses that are experienced today are diseases of disempowerment. And just people who, they just think that this is the way it's going to be because somebody said so. So the real healing can occur when people start opening up their mind a little wider and start considering the possibilities. You know, maybe they're exposed to another recovery story. You know, I didn't get through fibromyalgia being super positive. I just want to make that extremely clear. It wasn't me just being like, oh, yes, I'm totally going to recover, because there were a lot of days where I didn't really believe it, but I was open to the possibility of it, you know?
Yes.
And I think that that's also a flaw in the fundamentals of the New Age movement, is because they make you feel like if you are not positive all the time, then you're going to create really bad stuff in your life. But... Yeah. That's not true. And, you know, anyone who knows me will tell you that I am not positive all the time. Like, that's not possible.
No.
So,
where I was coming from, if you set your mind to a certain task, that comes back to you. If you are going to continue saying... like you said before, I've got this illness and I'm going to die and this blah 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 blah, what you put out is what you get back. And
exactly.
Have you right, so we've got some questions from the listeners. Would you support your listeners taking health into their own hands through alternative medicines? Is that your field?
You know, it really depends. I don't hold judgment on the what is it called? The regular medical system, there's a certain word for it, versus the alternative health system. You know,
yeah.
I feel like both of them have their pros and cons. And, you know, through my healing journey, I used both, and I was able to, strike a balance. But there was definitely a time when I was heavily dependent on the traditional health system, and that was not getting good. And I was also at a time when I was heavily dependent on the alternative health system, and that was no good.
Hmm.
So I think that really what it boils down to is, you know, listening to your own intuition, because you have so many more answers inside of you than anybody else does. Like, if you feel like you need to go and seek alternative health practice, go do it. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're on medications or something like that from a regular doctor, I mean, you might want to, you know, really, really consider, is it something that would be life-threatening if you went off of them? You know, I'm not recommending that anybody... you know, just blindly follow some advice. You know, they really need to take into consideration their own situation.
Yes. But then you get figures like from the World Health Organization that 90% of drugs doesn't work on 60% of the people. You can understand why people are taking, going to back to nature, if you like, and going to the alternatives.
But, I mean, there's just as much dogma within the alternative health system as well. You know,
yes,
I mean, I just want people to be aware of that
as well. Yeah, and the dodgy salesmen and corruption in that as well. Yeah, it's a minefield the same way.
So yeah, that's why intuition and discernment are important.
Do you have anyone that? Let me start again. Your youth. How would you describe yourself? Would you say you were anti-authority? You against the world, so to speak?
When I was younger?
Yes.
I had a bit of that touch in me, but I was never very outward about it because I've always been very introverted. And, you know, I always kind of took out my rage on the page because I'm an artist. So, I mean, whenever I would be very frustrated with something, I would just, you know, draw pictures about it or write poems about it or something. But, you know, I've always felt like the best way to kind of deal with the system is just sort of kind of transcend the system. So, therefore, I live in Costa Rica and I don't really, like, deal with the United States very much because I just don't live there. And, you know, it's funny because I'm going back in October for a period of time. And, you know, it'll be very interesting for me to see how I kind of interface with that society. But it's just, I'm not belligerent to police officers or anything, like, if that's what you're meaning, because they're just people too. You know, they're people who have families and they're confused. They don't really know who to listen to. They're just taking orders and trying to keep a job to feed families, you know?
Being in Costa Rica, it's I've never been, but I've seen videos and stuff, and it's kind of, or large parts of the island, is like being back to nature as such, and not in massive urban cities that the U.S. has. Do you... detect a different energy there, and that has helped you in your recovery?
I was mostly recovered. I've only lived here for about a year, so I just kind of came down because I wanted to escape the Portland winter. You know, so I mean, in terms of mental shifts, I made a lot of those while I was still in the States, so I don't want anybody to get the notion that you have to, like, go run off to a foreign country to, you know, get the benefits that I'm talking about. But, you know, there is definitely a cultural perspective shift when you come and live within another culture and just see how they behave. Like, they don't actually have an army here in Costa Rica. They don't have standing army, and the police officers largely don't do anything. So it's very much so like being in the wild, wild west. You know, so it's like if you want to go kill somebody, you know, nobody's really going to go find out. So it's really a very interesting place to be in the sense that, you know, there's really no law enforcement here. And I guess part of me likes that because, I mean, you know, when you're driving down the roads in the United States, like you're always paranoid that there's going to be a cop behind you or something, like he's going to be just waiting to pull you over. But, you know, here you don't really get that. So, but with that, there's also just a lot more recklessness and just crazy people. But in terms of energy shifts, I mean, I live on top of a mountain and I drink clean spring water and I go to farmers markets and get, you know, natural food grown by poor farmers. And, you know, it's an interesting life experience, but I don't think that when I go back to the United States, it's going to change much because when you do those internal changes, it doesn't really matter where you are in the world. You know, that you are with you everywhere you go.
Yes. Well, you know, it was a massive change of culture for me coming from the UK to here 12 years ago. And it's been a big learning curve. I didn't expect.
I bet.
I didn't expect to be doing what I'm doing now. It's quite a change. But I personally, myself, I have a lot of knowledge both on the ET side, which we covered before, and also on all the banking and the government fraud and all this. So I thought I would put it to good use. And everyone should find part of the your own empowerment is people should find what they're best at and what they like to do. You sound like you enjoy what you do, and I certainly do.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think that is definitely a lot of it, because, you know, you find all these people who are just, you know, working a job or something because they have to, and they're really putting the things that they're really good at aside, and their passions, and all the things that really spark their souls and make them feel alive, that takes a back seat because, you know, they're so busy trying to keep up an American lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to navigate around that. But, you know, I think one of the most important things when you're on a journey of self-empowerment is empowering yourself by enjoying the activities that you do. You know, like if you like knitting, go knit. If you like, you know, helping and volunteering in hospitals, go do that. You know, make time in your schedule for stuff like that, because it's really important, because the more that you're feeling alive and inspired and happy with whatever it is that you're doing, you know, that's contagious, and you start to help other people feel alive and inspired as well.
What is your take on meditation? Do you do it, and how long and how frequent if you do?
Meditation. Such a confusing subject for a lot of people.
Yes.
I think that a lot of people think that meditation is something that you just need to do, like, and sit on a zafu and sit there and chant your ohms and stuff like that. But my approach to meditation is just, like, it's very different. You know, I meditate when I'm doing stuff. Like, I meditate when I'm painting. I meditate when I am walking in the yard. I meditate when I'm washing dishes. I call it wash dish yoga. But no, seriously, like, I love feeling the water on my hands and the soap between my fingers. And, you know, it's just, it's a really wonderful feeling. And for me, I think it's a lot more practical, because I have a busy life, you know. It's a lot of time to sit down and just do nothing for an hour. I mean, sometimes it's necessary, but I think the best thing that people can really do as far as meditation goes is to learn how to still your mind when you're on the go. Like, so when you're driving a car, you know, feel the steering wheel underneath your fingertips, or feel the breeze as it's hitting your cheek, or, you know, feel your toes inside of your shoes. You know, these anchors really anchor your attention and your awareness into the present moment, and it only takes just a couple minutes. Or take some deep breaths while you're sitting there in traffic. I mean, this is like, you know, the toolkit of meditation. Like, you don't really need to go devote a bunch of time to it, but you're so able and ready to use it whenever you're really needing for it. You can just reach for it, these little tools.
That's kind of along the lines the way I do it. You know, I don't have the time to sit there for an hour. I started off going on YouTube and you say, oh, you do 45 minutes for an hour. I never did the chanting, but I found the more I did it, the less I needed. And I can almost go into like a meditative state or a trance-like state within a minute.
Yeah.
You know, you were right in what you're saying. It's making the mind still, and then using the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely like a benefit to doing longer meditations. You know, 2 years ago, I did one of those Vipassana meditation retreats where I was like a silent retreat for 10 days. And, you know, I didn't talk, and I meditated for 10 hours a day, like sitting cross-legged on a zafu, you know, like, and, you know, that was, I know, I've done some pretty weird things, but, like, it was cool because, you know, I got really intimate with my own mind. And, you know, for people who are just starting to awaken and getting into the self-empowerment thing, like, I think that longer meditations are kind of important. Because you're not trained to allow yourself to get quiet that quickly. You know, for people like you and me who have been doing this for a while, I mean, those little handy-dandy meditations where we can just do them while we're on the go is very useful because we don't have the constant broadcasting in our mind of, oh, you're a piece of shit, you're worthless, you know, look at you trying to meditate, blah, 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 you know, all of the voices that are coming up. Yeah. And so when people are new with it, it's good to try to get them to do it for longer periods of time, or even 20 minutes, because they're not as familiar with their own mind, and they don't really know when their mind is actually quiet.
No. That's we have a couple of people who are close to me on Cosmic Voice, and they have a great difficulty in quieting the mind. I said, well, you know, once that's the key to it all. However, where you want to sit, and if you want to chant, if you want to put binaural beats on or some of the solfeggio codes and all that stuff, just quieten the mind and then relax, you know, and see where it takes you. Have you been involved in or met any like shaman types?
Yes, actually. I lived in... It was kind of funny. I was looking for woofing, you know, like working on the organic farms.
Yes.
I was looking for that back in 2012, and I came across a woman's site, and she was all about deconstructing, you know, your internal belief systems. And, you know, I had been listening to the work of Byron Katie for a little while, and I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. And little did I know, she's actually a shaman. And so I did a bit of a apprenticeship with her for a few months when I was in Hawaii. And that was a very, very interesting experience. And I highly benefited from that.
Oh, sounds good. We had the King of Hawaii on the show recently, and they're obtaining, they're going back to a sovereign nation, stepping outside the U.S., and this Mr. Edmund Silver is the descendant of the last queen before the U.S. and the U.K., I might add, decided to claim the island for themselves as they have done over hundreds of years. So that was a very interesting experience. We've got about 5 minutes. I'll leave you to speak with whichever way you want to go with the last 5 minutes, and we'll see how it goes from there. Anything you would like to bring up?
I think I've said all the things that are really kind of crucially important. If there's anybody that has any questions, they can definitely ask. I'm willing to answer questions, or if you have any more questions, Thomas, I'm willing to answer them.
Let me just see if there's anything here. One of the questions is, it's a bit off the wall. You kept mentioning a person called Dave. Who is he, and is he your business partner, or is that your husband? Someone that you wanted to know.
Oh no, no, he's not my husband. Dave is my best friend in the whole world. He's the person that you met me through. He's on Cosmic Voice. His name's Dave Kelso. I synchronistically met him via YouTube a couple years back, and you know, we've hung out in person quite a few times, and I speak to him very often, and he's been my awakening buddy. I would call it. You know, not so much a business partner, but just a dear friend that has helped me do a lot of these shifts, because I think it's more powerful if you can have somebody by your side helping you, guide you through your bullshit, you know?
Yes.
It's a lot easier when you have somebody outside of you calling you on your bullshit, and you trust them and you love them, and they know, you know, that they have your best interest at heart.
Yes, I agree. Do you have a website? Or
I do. It is KaterinaEdwards.com, KaterinaEdwards.com. And I keep an active blog if people want to follow the videos that I do. I post them there. And I also have a newsletter where I send them out every week. And I just give people loads of tips and advice on how to be themselves to the fullest in a world that's constantly telling them not to be. So, you know,
yes.
It's a lot of fun.
Yes, it is. Do you find you have to we had Tanath on. She talks about shielding and grounding and centering. Is that something you partake in? Because the danger of meeting with people and interacting with people who are kind of with the inner demons is you're also taking on their energy as such. Do you have your own defense mechanisms for that?
Yes, actually. I have a friend who taught me this notion. It's called spiritual Teflon. And I just kind of like imagine myself sort of enwrapped in Teflon, you know, when I'm going into a situation that is a little difficult. You know, in terms of grounding and centering, it's just mainly those practices that I was telling you about, you know, just kind of feeling my own body here in this moment in this room. And also just allowing myself to breathe and to allow myself to feel the feelings that I'm feeling, because that's a lot of the reason why people feel off-center is because they have emotions circulating in them that they don't know what to do with. And, you know, some of the best things for you to do is just allow the feeling to come up. Like if you're feeling anxious, feel the anxiety, feel your heart pounding, feel your hands twitching and sweating, you know, and allow yourself to detach from any story that means it's bad, you know, because sometimes it's just a physiological response that needs to move through you.
Right, we've kind of pretty much run out of time. We've got a couple of minutes left for the music. I'd like to thank you very much for coming on. I enjoyed that, and from what I gathered from the members, so did they. Would you like to say anything? Would you like to say anything finally to the listeners?
Yeah, I really want to encourage people to continue to seek to be themselves no matter what. And even when it gets kind of hard and challenging and tricky and you have people telling you that you're crazy or weird or whatever, you know, it's okay. It's a sign that you're on the right path.
Yes, I agree. Right, thank you very much for that, Katrina, and hopefully maybe one day you can come back on again. That
I'd
was
love
very
that.
Interesting. Thank you. Right,
You're welcome.
Be back next Wednesday, not Thursday, next Wednesday at 8 p.m. With the normal ground show, no ET show next Wednesday. Hopefully we may have Mr. Keenan on again. If not, it'll just be Drake and I. Me and Drake may also, I'll also make you aware, maybe there's a possibility we may be on the PNN talk show again on Monday, depending on certain information becoming available in the next 24 to 36 hours. We'll see. Right, my name's Thomas Williams. I hope you enjoyed Ray and Katrina this evening. We'll be back next Wednesday. Bye for now.